WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. You might want to get out a pen and paper for today's show. Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker is here with his list of the 10 best records of 1994. And of course, he's brought along the records to play for us. Let's get started with a track from one of his top 10, a CD called What a Crying Shame by a group that's more country than rock, the Mavericks.
I loved you then, I love you still. I miss you, darling, I always will. Resign myself to feeling blue. Ain't found nobody since I
Ken, welcome back for our annual presentation of your 10 best list.
Well, thanks a lot. I'm glad to be here.
Where do the Mavericks fit in pop music of 94?
Well, they fit in many ways. To me, the Mavericks aren't just a country band. They're a band that's a young band that's been equally influenced by rock and roll. I mean, you can hear Roy Orbison in the way that the lead singer, Raul Malu, sings. They cover a Bruce Springsteen song on this album. I just think that they're a wonderful combination of things, a very traditional sound to their country music, so much so that when the album first came out, it was considered probably just a critic's record and wouldn't appeal to a mass audience in this age of, you know, Reba McEntire, middle-of-the-road kind of pop country. But it was one of those examples of records that, which also happened in the rock industry this year, of albums that slowly built into being hits. It wasn't as if it was an immediate number one hit in Billboard's charts and sustained itself. This was a slow builder, and it eventually went gold. It's on its way to selling a million copies. Very similar to the situation with Sheryl Crow and her debut album, Tuesday Night Music Club. That record came out, faded away, but people started playing it. There was a kind of buzz about it. There were a few videos on MTV, and they gather audiences that way. So I think that the Mavericks, to me, embody that kind of trend of the slow build this year, and also the way Raul Malu writes or co-writes most of his material. I think he's a real throwback to that sort of strong singer-songwriter tradition of the 70s, updated for the 90s.
Well, several entries on your 10 best list are singer-songwriters. Do you think that that just reflects your taste, or do you think that there are more and more singer-songwriters now in rock music that are making an impact?
Well, I think that there's a kind of expanded definition of a singer-songwriter these days. I mean, to me, the term means an artist who expresses his or her own sensibility, often through very autobiographical lyrics, and yet does it in the context of either as a solo artist or, in the case of the Mavericks, in a group context. And I think more and more you're getting that kind of very personal sort of writing and arranging and producing in a lot of the best of this music this year.
On your list is one of the originators of that singer-songwriter tradition, Joni Mitchell. What's her new record like?
I thought her new record was wonderful. It's called Turbulent Indigo. It didn't do very well. It peaked at number 47 on the Billboard charts. You know, as we talk, the year-end Billboard, it's languishing at number 186. I think it's finally a case where, you know, for years, there are many of us critics who said, oh, Joni, why don't you go back to the stuff you did best, that kind of singer-songwriter, folk-based melodies, you know, get away from that jazz stuff you're trying to pull off. And now she's done it, and there was no audience that came to her to meet her on her own terms. And I think that that's terrible. I think it's a tragedy that this record wasn't recognized as much as it should have been. I think it's a really, really strong record for her.
Why don't you play something from the new Joni Mitchell album for us?
Yeah, I'd like to play a track called How Do You Stop?
Hard bodies, soft emotions.
so fast, so smart. The world is at your feet, but what about your heart? Fame and fortune can't hold you tight. The late, late hours of the night. How do you stop?
How do you stop?
That's Joni Mitchell, and with me is Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker, and we're going over his picks for the best in pop music of 1994. Well, there's a couple of younger singer-songwriters on your 10 best list, Sam Phillips, Liz Phair. Do you think that the younger generations of singer-songwriters are heading in different directions than the singer-songwriters of the 70s?
Well, I think that they're certainly influenced by things that have come since the 70s, by punk, certainly, to a certain extent by rap music. And I think that singer-songwriters like Tori Amos and Sam Phillips and Liz Phair are combining that and using somebody like Joni Mitchell as a role model of somebody who's a real independent, didn't present herself as just a quote-unquote chick singer, aren't defined by their sexuality, and are writing real strong, forthright autobiographical lyrics. Or in the case of Sam Phillips, these beautiful sort of pop melodies that don't worry about whether they're too soft or too harsh, or they're just a kind of creations of their own. I think that Sam Phillips' album, Martinis and Bikinis, is just a wonderful pop record that many people, it seems to me, a very broad-based record that, again, should have found a much wider audience than it did.
What would you like to play for us from it?
I'd like to play a track called Baby, I Can't Please You.
That's Sam Phillips, and her record is featured on Ken Tucker's 10 Best list for 1994. You know, Ken, it seems in pop music now, you know, like on the one hand, there's the singer-songwriters, often in a more acoustic setting. And then on the other hand, you have the kind of sons of punk and, you know, the grunge rock descendants and stuff. You know, real kind of loud, noisy, guitar-driven bands, too. I think, pretty different directions.
Yeah, I think so. Certainly this year there's been this real nice revival of punk. I mean, punk has come back to work as an influence on a whole new generation of like 20-year-old kids who are just discovering it for the first time and really getting into old Sex Pistols and Clash records and stuff. So you have this phenomenon of bands like Green Day and Weezer and a duo called Ween. Green Day sold 3 million copies when you do that, you're not just hitting just punk rock fans. You're not just hitting 20-year-olds or teenagers. You're hitting adults who grew up on punk rock who really think there's something worthwhile to what these kids are doing. It's a much more broad-based sort of audience that you're hitting. And I think that's also true of a band like Pearl Jam, which came out of Seattle, part of that whole grunge scene, which is now either by the death of Kurt Cobain and many of this commercial success, you don't just think of them as that sort of niche band of Seattle grunge. It's become a much more of a broad-based pop band. What I really like about this Pearl Jam album called Vitalogy is that what's held me back before on them is Eddie Vedder, the lead singer. It seems so self-pitying. The music is so downbeat as to be almost a parody of kind of depressed singer-songwriter lyrics in the context of this loud rock and roll. This one, I love the way the guitars just frequently overpower his voice. His voice becomes just another one of the instruments that make this music sound really powerful and good. And you don't have to really follow the words. You know what the emotions are just by hearing the tone of his voice.
So what song do you want to play?
I'd like to play a cut called Corduroy.
That's Pearl Jam from their latest album, Vitalogy, one of the albums on Ken Tucker's 10 Best list. You want to play something else from the kind of loud category?
Sure.
Of your 10 Best list?
Loudness rules, man. an even younger band than Pearl Jam, a group of women called L7, put out an album called Hungry for Stink, which I thought really tapped into that sort of early Sex Pistols, British kind of punk, even though they're from L.A. The track I'd like to play is called Riding with a Movie Star, and you're going to notice that it's very nearly just an instrumental. What I really like about this, it's kind of like an all-purpose theme song. You know, if I was living my life with a theme song accompanying me, I would want this driving piece of music behind me, and the only lyric is the title of the song. They just yell, Riding with a Movie Star.
I'm going to fight you for that theme. I like it, too.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Ken. You can have it for your theme.
Thanks.
Okay. This is L7. It's L7 from their album Hungry for Stink, one of the albums on Ken Tucker's 10 Best list. And I like that because it's so pop sounding. It's so...
Yeah, it's real accessible, even though it's got that kind of brutal guitar edge to it. It's still very accessible in its melody. I like it a lot.
Now, would you still call this alternative rock? And if this is alternative rock, then what's the mainstream now?
I think alternative has become the mainstream. I think that through, as usual, in this kind of pop culture situation, you have genuine quality that's also marketed very shrewdly, and it becomes a kind of music that many, many people want to hear. In this case, literally millions of people want to hear Pearl Jam's record, which, you know, went to number one immediately upon its release. That's fairly unthinkable even 5 years ago that a record this raw could go to that position on the charts so quickly. And so I think it's a combination of older rock fans thinking, oh, this is what's hip, this is what I'm going to investigate, and a combination of also the young audience to which that music is directly aimed. I mean, a lot of these musicians are in their teens and 20s, and it's aimed directly at their contemporaries. And so I think that the music is very strong in the sense that it attracts a rock audience that's not just a teenage audience, but an adult audience that's come to learn all these kinds of forms of rock and roll and don't find it alienating anymore. The whole idea of shocking your parents or alienating your parents with the music you play is becoming harder to do because your parents have grown up with that music and they get all the references.
Yeah, well, you're in that position of being one of those parents.
Sure. I mean, I think in a way rock and roll has become, an enormously subtle thing in the sense that while it's still a very elementary music and technically very crude and purposely so, there's a whole body of references now that when somebody listens to a Pearl Jam record, they're picking up on Led Zeppelin, on the Rolling Stones, on an entire history of music. They can hear the quotations and what's being done to them to make them original again.
We're reviewing the year in pop music with Fresh Air rock critic Ken Tucker. Time for a short break. This is Fresh Air. We're looking back on 1994 in pop music with rock critic Ken Tucker. What happened that interested you most in black pop this year?
Well, I thought there were some strong rap and hip-hop records this year. There was nothing that sustained an album enough for me to put an album on my list, but that there were some really strong debuts that, for one thing, last year I was bemoaning the rise of gangster rap in the sense that it seemed to me so misogynistic, so needlessly violent in its imagery. On the other hand, I thought it was a very valuable form in the sense that it really relayed what was going on in the world these days, and it was one of the few places in pop culture where those kinds of sentiments could be heard. I think that was continued this year with acts like Method Man, who's a guy from a very popular hip-hop band called the Wu-Tang Clan. He had a single called Bring the Pain this year, which was really strikingly dramatic and very forceful. I thought it was one of the best kind of rap singles. Another act, a guy called Nas, had an album called Illmatic, which I also thought was very good. I like the way a lot of black pop this year combined rapping and hip-hopping and rhythm and blues in a much more melodic way. Certainly someone like R. Kelly and Boyz II Men, and my personal favorite, this female trio TLC, who put out a record called Crazy Sexy Cool, which is like my album title of the year, I think. And their single off of that album called Creep, I think, is just a wonderful, catchy, bouncy, yet hard-edged piece of music.
Why don't we hear it?
Good.
That's TLC. My guest is Ken Tucker, and we're talking about his picks for the best records in pop music 1994. Well, Ken, I think it's that time for you to actually read your list.
Okay.
Of the 10 best 1994.
The Mavericks, What a Crying Shame. Sam Phillips, Martinis and Bikinis. L7's Hungry for Stink. Joni Mitchell's Turbulent Indigo. Pearl Jam's Vitalogy. Liz Phair, her album was called Whip Smart. Sugar, led by Bob Mould, and his record is called File Under Easy Listening. Oasis, a young British band, with their album called Definitely Maybe. Madonna, my wonderful beloved Madonna, I thought returned to form completely with her album Bedtime Stories.
Parentheses, Ken Tucker, the only person in America still willing to defend Madonna.
That's right. Well, you know, perversity has its virtues, I think. And finally, The Pretenders, who made a real strong comeback, I think, with Last of the Independents.
Great. You want to do your runners-up?
Sure. There were lots of strong country records, I thought, this year, including Mark Chestnut's album, What a Way to Live, and David Ball's Thinkin' Problem, and a Mike Henderson record that I thought got completely ignored called Country Music Made Me Do It. I liked the Sheryl Crow debut, Tuesday Night Music Club. I liked R.E.M.'s album, Monster. And I really like Richard Thompson's album called Mirror Blue.
Well, great. Ken, I wish you a very happy new year.
Well, same to you, Terry. Thanks.
And thanks a lot for sharing some of the best music of the year, or at least your picks for the best music of the year.
That's right. The two may not actually intersect, but I'm glad you had me anyway.
Let's go out with something. What would you like to play?
Well,
I
think a good way to combine two of my runners-up, there was an album that's a tribute to Richard Thompson of other artists covering his songs. The album is called Beat the Retreat, and R.E.M. did this really beautiful version of the Richard Thompson song Wall of Death.
Great. Well, let's hear it. And Ken Tucker is rock critic for Fresh Air. Happy New Year again, Ken.
Same to you.
I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.